We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Yep, it's the world's most dangerous morning show, The Breakfast Club. Charlamagne Tha God, Jess Hilarious. Envy's not here today, but we have the CEO and president of the International African American Museum in Charleston, South Carolina. Dr. Tanya Matthews is here. Good morning, Dr. T.
Hello. Good morning, Charla. Good morning, Jess. How y'all doing this morning?
We're good.
Blessed, black, and highly favored.
Yes, that's right.
How are you?
That's the only way to be. I am well. I am very, very well. Mm-hmm.
How has it been being a black woman in leadership of an international African-American museum in Charleston?
So we just coming in hot.
Hey, it's Women's History Month.
Is that how
we just coming out of Black History Month, too. Might as well get into it.
That's right. Let's go ahead and intersect. It has been good. I mean, you know, it has its tensions, because mm-hmm. I would say one thing that the brothers and sisters are happy to see me.
Yeah.
And also surprised. You know, I'm a D.C. native. I also spent some time in Detroit, right? You know, stuff gets a little regular. You know, we're mm-hmm. used to seeing us, and mm-hmm. then it's about how we represent. But, you know, truthfully, being down in Charleston, being in South Carolina, we are fewer and farther between. So most folks are proud, and they are excited. And folks in the Lowcountry can pray.
So absolutely.
Listen, I got a whole line of prayer warriors trying to keep it together. But then, you know, there are the tensions. Mm-hmm. Some folks see the unusual and embrace it. Some folks don't.
Mm-hmm.
There is that balancing that you do, maintaining. You got to have a serious sense of self. You do have to have a serious sense of self. Everyone who's in leadership has to be able to do some self-critique, mm-hmm. right? That's just what happens, right? And you have to be able to take feedback and listen. But if you are in an environment that does not fully and constantly welcome you, you have to have some, shall we say, discernment along with that critique.
That's right.
You have to know which of the criticisms are coming at you to lift you up and which ones are coming at you to break you down.
Ooh, how do you do that, though?
That's back on the prayer warriors, probably. you know, and there are some people that you really trust. Like, you know, you have some people in your life that can call you out. Right. And you know that, you know, they love you. You also know they kind of wise. Mm-hmm. And so you can take that under advisement. I have a few of those folks, in my life. And so I know when they say something, it's real. And then sometimes I will bring things to them. They're like, okay, this is some feedback I got. You know, what do you think, about this? And so yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And there are some moments where you just decide we just gonna have to brush our shoulders off on that one and keep it moving.
There's a conversation about Black women in leadership in this country that I don't think we're having, because when you talk to the sisters, they say there's challenges. No, they be trying to take y'all out. When I think about Claudine Gay, when I think about what's happening to Fannie Willis, when I think about Marilyn Mosby, when I think about the VP Kamala Harris, they be trying to take y'all out.
Yeah, that is true. And I would say, you know, it's so funny. We do need sometimes other folks to say that, right? Because you're right. When you are in those positions, we say, yes, we have challenges. Mm-hmm. There are learning curves. You know, we have all of these phrases, because the truth of the matter is we have a job to do, right? Mm-hmm. And there is language that we use, in these positions. And so I like to think that those who can hear what we're saying, and those who can't hear, don't hear what we're saying, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was very interesting watching the conversations around, Dr. Gray, Dr. Claudine Gray. And I think what folks missed is that her situation wasn't unique. It was high profile. There's a very, very big difference. There were so many, you know, commonalities that I had seen in other conversations with other sisters. And maybe, you know, they're the head of HR or the chief general counsel of some giant company. And those aren't the folks who get on the news, right? Mm-hmm. Those aren't the names that you would know. But the battle was the same. The kind of attacks, the way things are being interpreted were very similar. And so I would say probably one of the most discouraging things about that to me is that I could recognize what was happening, which meant that in many ways it was familiar. But then again, I will also say that, you know, sometimes there are roles and positions you take where you understand that that weathering the storm is part of the work. Mm-hmm. And if you aren't in the storm, you're probably not in the right position.
Wow.
Right. So, you know, it's an interesting balancing act. Yoga and prayer. One more time, y'all. Say it with me. Yoga and prayer.
Yoga and prayer.
Yoga and prayer. I'm trying another thing. I'm with child, so I'm trying yoga now. Been with the prayer. Been with prayer. Yes. My mother is my prayer warrior, among many others.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm trying yoga now. I'm trying it. You know, as I gaze off, I'm really trying it.
I think being a mother also helps, because sometimes being in protection mode, when you're protecting others, there's a different kind of strength in that, right? Like sometimes it's easier to stand in the gap for others than it is to stand in the gap for yourself. Yeah. So I find that motherhood, fatherhood, parenthood, whatever hood you're talking about, that also helps in that space.
But who's protecting the mothers? That's what I always...
Mm. Charlemagne. You, I mean, so that is a really good question. And I think that, if I can give some grace, to those that I would like to see protect the mothers a little bit more, I think one of the challenge, particularly with Black mothers, maybe all mothers, is that we don't always call for help. Right. You know, we know that Black women have this thing. We're going to take a lick. We're going to keep on moving because dinner is at 6.
Yeah.
Like this is how this works. I got issues. I got challenges. But baby got to go to school. Let's make it happen.
That's right.
And so I think that kind of thing where we do and we do and we do until we can't do anymore doesn't really give a lot of room for those who want to help us and who would help us enough notice. You know, with Black women, by the time you find out we need some help, we own the flow.
Yeah.
You know, we find in all the records. So mama, you knew?
That's right.
You knew this was an issue. And so I think part of it is indeed the environment around us, but also part of it is knowing when to pause, to acknowledge, also to ask for some help and some support, which is not always our strong suit.
Jess. Because you know you don't like to ask for no help.
No, not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
No, not all the time. And then, you know, that comes with experience, too. Like, you know, and that creates experience, you know, so I can be able to tell, you know, a story. You know what I'm saying? And not that's what I do it for. But I like to go through some things, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, for myself, mm-hmm. as opposed to just hearing, you know, the ones before me that yeah. they went through. And it's like, oh, maybe it could be different for me, or maybe, you know, I can gain something different from it, you know, and then teach others and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So, yeah, he's right. He's right. I'm very resilient, though. I'm very resilient. And I can be stubborn, but I come from my mother, too.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So it speaks volumes to what you're saying. It's a result of that. Mm-hmm. But for the people who don't know, why do you think it's so important for us to tell our own stories?
So I think it's really important to tell our own stories because, one, they belong to us, right? I have this thing about stories. There are stewards of stories and there are owners of stories. Now, mm-hmm. we want everyone to tell our story. That means you're a steward, right? Yeah. If I give you my story, I want you to share it. You know, particularly when we talk about, say, African American history, I don't need just Black folks telling Black folks' story. We want everyone mm-hmm. to tell the story, and that makes you a steward. But then if you're the owner of the story, mm. right, you have some special responsibility, but you also got some special love for your own story. I mean, only you can tell it with that level of emotion, that level of flavor. And the other thing is, one of the things that I do like about modern conversations is I often hear the phrase, do not argue with lived experience.
That's right.
Right? And so when folks are at least willing to say that, that means that you as the owner of the story are the authority on that story. And you can step into that space of, this is my lived experience. Mm-hmm. And folks may want to dismiss the bigger picture, but they can't dismiss that particular story that you are speaking to because it does belong to you. And so I think that's one major reason. But the other major reason is, There is power in, frankly, in talking about yourself. Now, some folk talk about themselves a little too much. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm talking about. That's not what I'm talking about. But to be able to decide that your own story deserves space, right? You know, head space, heart space, all that kind of stuff. And so you are going to speak up and you are going to talk about and tell your story. I think that's important for everyone. But real talk, you know, Black folks were often told the opposite. Right, that our story didn't need space, that it didn't deserve space, and we weren't allowed to talk about these experiences. Mm-hmm. And then we have to use softer words when we're talking about mm-hmm. these experiences, as if telling my story automatically meant I was blaming someone. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But either way, it's the lived experience. And so I think for Black folks, some of the anger, some of the self-loathing, some of the challenges that we have are really about having to hold the story in and what it takes to do that. You have to diminish self to hold the story in. You have to reorient yourself to be constantly surrounded by everyone else's story. And I think it's something that we see often when folks come to the museum, particularly when Black folks come to the museum. It feels like a bit of an exhale, like that's me on the wall, a real pretty wall because we look good. Y'all need to come on down. We look good. We look good down at the museum. So it's a beautiful space, and I watch folks walk into the room, and one of the things they seem to be surprised by is to have our stories, obviously referencing Black folks. Our stories told in such a magnificent and expansive way, right? We're a big museum and we're a modern museum, and you can see elements of designs. You know, we've gotten rewards and awards for our architecture and that kind of thing. But to see, you know, our stories in that kind of space is still unique. And so sometimes people walk in and I can almost like literally feel the exhale as they see the story in that way.
How has business been since opening last summer?
So we have passed our 100,000th visitor.
Wow.
Yes. For us, it's been less than 7 months when we hit that number. So that has been amazing. You know, the number one complaint we get is that folk can't get a ticket. I'm like, well, you know, there is a website. You can pre-register for your ticket. You wouldn't have to worry about that. So that has been really good. I'm also excited that, you know, we're still getting interest from, you know, media and that kind of thing. And they're asking other questions, right? One, when you build something new, everybody wants to talk about you building a new thing. So I'm excited that folks are still asking questions. The Genealogy Center. Our Center for Family History remains very, very popular. Folks' eyes get real big. when we talk about that. So, a lot of those classes are also hybrid. Mm-hmm. So we're now that it's been, you know, a little over 6 months, we are getting visitors who have taken one of our virtual classes and now they're really excited to be in the actual Center for Family History, right? Now they got follow-up questions. So that has actually been very cool too. And this was our first semester of formally supporting school groups. Obviously, school groups could always come, but we had to get, you know, the program and the special tours in place. And so that is starting. And there's a lot of life, you know, that comes into the building, you know, with eighth graders in that space. But I would also say it's a little interesting because, say, particularly for urban school districts, African-American students and that kind of thing, it's always this interesting tension around how to discipline, shall we say, you know, 30 excited young folks. But, you know, we really are a culturally black space.
Yeah.
So it's a little different. It's a little different. I have volunteers that will pull your child
smashing
up.
You up.
Listen, we got grandmothers on duty and they will just give you that look and the baby's like, okay. So, which is actually really good. Mm-hmm. And it's done with love, but it is really done. And also they come in and they look, they see, I say, oh, I see auntie. Okay. Let me act.
That's right.
So that has actually been really cool.
What were some of the criticisms you had to overcome when you first opened the museum?
Yeah. So it was interesting. I would say pre-concerns, right? Which, I'm also happy to say were, frankly, invalidated, if you ask me. So one, for example, on the black folks side, black folks were wondering, were curious, were critical of whether or not we'd be able to tell the truth. Literally, that folks were like, y'all gonna tell the truth up in there? Because, and real talk, you know, this is the South, this is the deep South, the South Carolina is low country. I would say, you know, telling the truth about black history is not exactly the brand. Sort of in that space. And there were some concerns, that we wouldn't want to do it, right? And I think we got over that. And then there were concerns that we simply wouldn't be able to do it. It got in the bless your heart category. Y'all really think y'all gonna pull this off? Bless your heart. But you know, I actually took that to heart. I understood that folks are trying to tell me that this was going to be hard, to do this. But you know, they've come in, they've seen the stories, they've seen some stories that they know. You know, because so much happened in South Carolina, even though we're a national museum, we have plenty of South Carolina stories. And all of these things are not that far back. Mm-hmm. So we have people who have lived some of the stories we're telling.
Wow.
So they will come in, they'll be very excited, like pointing at stuff. I've literally heard phrases like, girl, I ain't seen that picture of her in 30, 40 years. Word? Can I get you into the story booth so we can get the rest of the story? So that was on that. And then non-black folks, their biggest concern was, you know, are you going to yell at me? you noticed, Charlotte, that was the big one. It was, are you going to yell at me? But the interesting part is that some folks who were ready, they were like, I get it. I've read snippets. I'm ready. Which part am I going to get yelled at? Mm-hmm. Like they were basically asking, I'm ready. And I'm like, woof, yelling at you would not be good for business. That is not what we are trying to do here, sort of in this space. But the other thing it is, because it's black folks telling black folks stories from a black perspective. That's why there's no yelling. It's not, say, an intentionally trying to be nice, is that this conversation is actually about us. You have the opportunity to be a fly on the wall. Hear all the stories that we may have told at the dinner table that you never got to hear, or about books we've read or experiences and that kind of thing. I'm always surprised when folks are just finding out about some things that I've always known. Mm-hmm. Right. And these the everyday folks, I have a really, really, really good girlfriend, white sister. She was my ride or die when I was hanging out there in Detroit. And one day she says, I said something, something, something. We're going to open up like we always do with the Black National Anthem. Yeah. Da, da, da. And I had seen her at events because she would go with me to all these events. She knew the words. Right. So she mother was singing. And she said, well, what's the Black National Anthem? I said, you know, that's that song, the Lift Every Voice and Sing. Mm-hmm. And she literally said, oh, I thought that was just the song that black folks like to sing every time they open up an event, right? So because that isn't part of the language and the history, folks will say, you know, I just found out about the Tuskegee experiment. Word? Oh, okay. That explains so many of our previous conversations, sort of in terms of those things. And so it's an incredible opportunity. And so folks are not getting yelled at. They're very surprised that they're not getting yelled at, but they're buying all the books instead. So I think those are the kinds of things. And then, you know, we did get some interesting comments that were more subtle. If anyone has also read Lonnie Bunch's book, A Fool's Errand, when he talks about the building of the African American History Museum at the Smithsonian, you get so like subtle things like, you know, well, how much did that cost again? Which is a good question, mm-hmm. and it makes sense. We want to be financially responsible. But you can tell when it's asked in certain environments versus others, right? Mm. Which is really the question is it worth that much? Should we actually be spending that much on that? And so the energy of those kinds of questions come off quite a bit. I do have some neighbors that are still concerned about the boom boom music. That might be coming out. So we do turn down the Breakfast Club when we're playing that, when we're setting up in the morning. But you know, so you will get, I think, those kinds of comments and conversations there. But I would say, you know, on paper and most loudly, we've been very well received. But I would also acknowledge that there is always a bit of a honeymoon period, especially when folks are paying attention. And so we're soaking up all the good vibes, and we will use them as a fuel to move forward through whatever the next phase is.
Mm. How do you feel about places like Florida? You know, they're making it illegal for kids to learn about our history.
Yeah, all right. Let me channel my inner Michelle. Let me channel my inner Michelle and go high on this one. Okay.
On a scale of 1 to Harriet Tubman, how black do I gotta be right now?
Exactly. So here's the thing about this. You know, we're doing a lot of talk around diversity and inclusion. They do all the studies. Businesses do better. Schools do better. Kids do better. Everything does better when we're doing sort of diversity and inclusion. I'm so curious as to why it has still not occurred to anyone that perhaps America's superpower is our diversity. That being the most diverse nation on the planet is why we manage to be and stay number one despite all the challenges we have. You know, if you measure the school systems one to one, America's, you know, we don't necessarily win on that. When you compare things like, ooh, I don't know, access to healthcare one to one, we're not ahead on that. Like all of these individual measures, you know, we're never quite at the top. Mm-hmm. Yet and still, we are one of the most powerful, not the most powerful nation on the planet. Mm-hmm. The most creative, the most innovative. We're always sort of leading in these spaces. And I believe it's because we have this level of diversity, this wrangling. We are not monolithic in that space. And so whenever you have anything that challenges our superpower, right? So frankly, I think this sort of anti-diversity, anti-teaching, the culling of history, I think it's the kryptonite to our superpower. Mm. And so I don't understand, and I don't envision, say, places like a Florida with what they're doing. I don't think that you can disenfranchise half of your population and still be.
We're welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It's called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It's an insider's look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the 5-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA draft, John Wall, will give us his unique perspective on the hottest topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. CJ will be bringing his A-list comedian buddies to keep it light and fire off some hoop takes. Plus, John will be inviting current and former NBA players, friends, and teammates to join the show as well to give their unfiltered accounts of what really goes on in the league from a player's perspective. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Economically viable, right? Mm-hmm. I don't see how you can not leave a whole lot of money on the table when you got half your genius locked behind the door. And this is not just about limiting Black folk. You are also limiting everybody else when they do not have the opportunity to learn one of the greatest human resiliency stories of all time. Listen, Black folks are mythical. Right. Sure. Just with all the ways we sort of tell these stories. So when you take those stories, when you take those lessons out of the history and the learning, we are all weaker. Right. You know, Black folks, we're the ones raging against it because this really challenges our ability to identify ourselves. But at the end of the day, everyone pays for this. And so I don't think it's a wise move. But I would also say that at the end of the day, our elected officials are elected because we elected them, mm-hmm. right? And so, I have a low tolerance on these kind of conversations. I always respond with, well, did you vote? That's my first mm-hmm. part of the question. Like, and I know, and da-da-da-da, and stealing a vote, and calling the vote, and change. Okay. You can't complain about that to me until you vote, right? And I was just listening one day, and the brother was like, listen, I'm not sure whether it works or not, but I know that the cost for the opportunity is way too high. So I'm going to go ahead and I said, that's a really good way of looking at that. And so while I do hold our leaders accountable, because I am a leader and I know what those responsibilities are, I also hold the folks who have the power, a little chunk of the power, as well, right? Because frankly, if we, I don't know, you know, stop supporting this or that, it is about money. And so a lot of these conversations go where the money is.
Yeah.
And so I would say, now Charleston has the International African American Museum. We also have beaches. So if you're looking for an alternative, right? If you're looking for something else, to do, you can come down for that way. But I don't think it's wise. And I do think it's very, very, dangerous. And I think that this trying to tamp down a significant portion of the American identity is why we are all so shook, even if we can't quite articulate it.
Well, when you look at where we are now in this country, what can the International African American Museum teach us about overcoming a lot of these challenges we're facing?
So, you know, it's interesting where we are now. I like to use the analogy of a rubber band, right? If you're trying to break a rubber band, you got to stretch it until it breaks. Otherwise, it'll just snap back. And I think what you will learn sort of in our museum and museums like this is that we have been here before.
That's right.
Right. Lessons that you do not fully learn, you are doomed to repeat. You know, history is a gracious teacher, and you can redo the test as many times as you need to until you get all the answers correct. And so when you learn about periods such as, for example, Reconstruction. Right. That is the period in our history that most reminds me of what's happening right now, which is there is this moment of great hope, great strides, African-American elected officials just popping up out of whatever. Slavery is apparently over. We're going to move forward. The slapback was ridiculous.
That's right.
this is where we come into the Jim Crow. This is where we get into what we call the nadir. Right. It got really, really bad. When we saw, the nation, allowing so the African American community to make this level of progress, right? And so as we're looking at this now, you know, I remember very recently there was a period of hope. Black folks getting elected to stuff they weren't supposed to get elected
to. That's right, President Obama.
We were moving forward. We were having all of these conversations. And so here comes the slapback, right? In terms of that we have to stretch, these concepts, and nothing is ever one and done, right? It's like going to the gym, right? Ladies, y'all with me? Big day coming up. Whatever that dress is, you got to fit in this dress. We in there working it out for 45 days. Boom. We get in a dress. Done. If you never went to the gym again, guess what? You're not getting back in that dress. You're not getting back in the dress. And so it works the same way. And so, you know, I think we make these strides, we make these moves, and then we're like, great, boom, that battle is done. Let's move on to the next battle. Mm-hmm. But it all requires constant nourishment, at least for a generation or two, sort of in that space. So I think one, the lessons that we can learn is that this is not entirely new, right?
Yeah.
Two, the thing we learn is that you must keep keeping it on.
Mm-hmm.
And three, sometimes have changed a bit. So let's level up a little bit on some of our strategies and the things that we can do, because the truth of the matter is that with all this that is going on, Black folks and those who ally and accomplice with us are farther along, and we do have more power, and we do have more options than we did, which means we have additional tactics and things that we can do, and things that we can use. So one, it should be somewhat encouraging. We're not the first to have to go through this, but two, it should be very encouraging, because we don't just talk about the struggles in the museum. We also talk about the progress, right? Learn about the progress, you know, do something, you know, with that progress. Think about our platforms differently. And so hopefully it's a little encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's really encouraging.
What are you looking at?
I'm just seeing if you
want. Because he be staring at me out of nowhere. He be staring because he always say.
Giving you some space.
Yeah, because he be staring at me because he be like, when I get too quiet, That means I'm tired. I'm pregnant.
Just make sure she's still with us. That's all.
I am with us. Speaking of being pregnant, okay, so it is Women's History Month.
It is Women's History Month.
And earlier, it's the first day for it, and earlier I spoke about my mom. I wanted to honor her, you know. But, like, what are some other ways that we can honor, you know, the women? Not even only our moms and women in our lives, but just honor women, period.
Yeah.
You know, for women's history.
You know, I am honestly still a sucker for being referred to as, you know, being part of the lineage, right? Yeah. You know, I love it when folks be like, I see you, sister, you magical, just like the rest of them.
Yeah.
Like those kinds of things. I mean, it's nice, you know, when folks, you know, compliment us as individuals, but I think it's also nice to be in that category of strong Black woman. Don't abuse it, right? Don't overdo it, like make us do everything. But there is something to that. Just phrases like "I see you, sis."
Yeah,
is so powerful. Like we don't even know what you're talking about. We just I feel seen today.
Yeah,
right? Yes. okay.
Just recognition.
So that I think is good. And I think to also do a 360, right? You know, we honor our mothers, we honor our grandmothers, but let's make sure the nieces and the daughters and the younger cousins feel a little love too.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so building that up now. And it's really interesting. I think I've come to the age where I can see how much it makes a difference. You just see their eyes light up.
Yeah.
Like you see me. And so that I think is in the lovey-dovey kind of generic stuff. But I would also say for those of us in the work, you know, some real deal tactical stuff. I remember being in meetings, where, you know, your classic power play shenanigans, you know, were sort of happening, some about race, some about gender, all this kind of stuff. And I saw one sister take one comment, like, really to heart. Like I saw it. This was back in COVID times. So it was like Zoom days, you know, we could like private chat to folk. And you know, I sent her a quick note. I was like, honey, we all heard him say it. Brush your shoulders, level up. I see you. Keep it moving. And you know, she's like, you saw that? You heard that? You see me? I was like, of course I see you. I got you. We're here. I feel it too. But we will discuss after the meeting. And it meant the world, to her in those spaces. So I would also say that as we are out there moving and shaking, like when you see things happening, you know how we do that wink, that nod, that little look that we can always cross the room. I remember asking my mother once because there was sister and I, and we were sort of scheming behind there was some business stuff going on. And I said, Mommy, I said, they're going to know that we're talking to each other. We're not supposed to talk to each other because we're supposed to be on different sides, right? We're supposed to be on different sides of this conversation. And my mother said to me, she said, I cannot explain to you why, but for some reason, they never figure out that the Black women are talking to each other.
Damn.
I was like, oh, I was like, really? Because it's just the two of us. Like what? She said, I don't know. And so which is wonderful that we can still have that language, you know, in those spaces. And I know that there are some folks who are concerned that if they align in the wrong way, right, that the pushback will come to them too. I was afraid. I was like, we gonna get in trouble, you know, sort of in that space. One, it's trouble that's worth getting into. So buckle up. But two, I think that one of the challenges of the myth is that we don't work together and that we don't align. And so folks don't easily see it when it's happening. So I say that is another way. And then, you know, on a practical tip, I don't know, everybody once a week, look up a woman's story that you've never heard of. I don't know.
Yeah.
Find a famous sister and look it up, and then take her story as her story. It is not a challenge to your story. Just because you haven't done XYZ or just because I would like to talk about ABC does not mean I'm telling you that you have not done enough. Brothers, it does not mean that I don't love you. It just means that it's my month, okay?
All right.
Just like we did for February, it's March. Like, it's my month in that space. And I also like to think of these months as this is Women's History Kickoff month, right? Yeah. But this is how you kick it off for the rest of the year. So feel free to share a powerful woman story in July. Just it's okay, right? Listen, you will be all right.
Yeah.
I just got a couple more questions. Who's the woman story that inspired you?
Oh, I think it would be the other half of my life and my brain, and that's going to be Nikki Giovanni and Maya Angelou. A couple folks know that the other half of my life is as a poet. Is as a poet. And, you know, when I was coming up and I was young and I was doing my thing, every once in a while, sort of an elder or older person would come to me like, you know who you remind me of? Nikki Giovanni. And I knew the name, and it was just such a thing that folks would relate me to that, because of course, you know, she had inspired me. You know, we all have our kind of Nikki like poem. And then I actually got to meet her. You know, we were a couple degrees of separation, and then she edited a collection, and I got in the collection. And so to be recognized by someone who recognizes you, and then it was after this, I was just looking at her as a sister and a black woman and a poet. And then I began to understand all the LGBTQ, sort of that community and that challenge. And I'm like, she ain't complained boo about that. She just up in there hustling and working and doing her thing. And then when we had that shooting at the university in Virginia, I swear Nikki saved them all. Just the way that the spirit of a sister and then wrapping that in poetry just sort of calmed the campus down. So that was Nikki, because I grew up sort of wanting to have that kind of fire. And then she saw me. And then there's Maya Angelou, which is, I will never be that nice, calm, and peaceful. I mean, she just had that essence, that spirit. And what most people probably don't know, if you haven't seen her, she was really tall. Right, she was over like 6 feet. She's around 6 feet. She is majestic, and she still walked that way because she also used to dance. For the longest time, she gave the welcome freshman address at Duke University, which is where I went. So that was the first time I got to see her in person, and just this level of energy. But even in that peacefulness, when she would talk about stories, which is, you know, I don't let people bring negative energy in my house. If I'm having an event and I see some negative energy, I kindly escort them out the door. Mm. And I was like, oh, we can do that. Then I also found out that she had a life. She's a little free. She ain't care. Right? Yeah. She ain't care if she wants something, she go get it. I was like, okay. All right. So you can be this, and you can still be full and human, and whole. And she does something that I don't quite yet do with my poetry, which is, you know, a lot of her poetry was incredibly personal and incredibly open to like her particular experience. And that was also something that I was reaching for. And so between those two women, like, every time a new documentary or book or something comes out, it just sort of blows my mind and reminds me that they're whole people. So I would say those are two of my inspiration stories.
Well, what are the plans for the 1 year anniversary of the museum? That's the
summer.
Ooh,
Lord.
What are we doing?
Oh my
gosh,
it is so coming. You know, because we just opened. It's like the anniversary's already. Like is that 12 months? You know, obviously we opened up on June 27th, and we start our opening ceremonies a little bit before that. For me, that means I get the entire month of June. I definitely get the entire Juneteenth season. All right. So Juneteenth is our whole anniversary season. So, of course, there is Juneteenth itself. So we are going to have some special programs and kickoffs for that. And one of the things I actually like about that is that in our particular community, the museum does not have to lead Juneteenth. And folks may be surprised to hear me say that, you know, that I'm excited to be sort of like supporting, but that's a sign of a community that's growing, right? So now the Lowcountry got 4-5 like Juneteenth celebrations, and I'd be out there trying to get to all of them. So that's good. So that's kind of the kickoff in that space. And so there's that joy, and then there's also that reverence. Like the thing I do is I like to always interweave sort of the trauma and the joy and the resilience and the victory, all that together, because it also comes around the anniversary of Mother Emanuel, right? So all of that is happening. They are not disconnected, and they don't have to be.
Yeah.
You know how black folks do. You've been to our funerals. We know how to get this done, right? And so that's kind of how we had that kickoff. We're going to have sort of our own version of kind of like a classy bazaar is how we're going to do sort of our anniversary event. I go to a lot of sit down galas with the tablecloths and all that kind of stuff. And it's good, mm-hmm. but you know, when you can do something a little different, do a little something a little different. So we finally have our building. So we're going to be able to use our outside space to have sort of a kind of an upscale kind of bazaar. So we're designing what that's going to look like. So stay tuned, on that, what that's coming. During June, Secretary Bunch is coming down. So Secretary Lonnie, but I know I'm looking at your face. So he told me, he's like, you get a couple things. What do you need? Wow. He is a good man. He's a good man. And he's a great mentor to many of us in the field. And so he's going to come down. We're going to do a little fireside chat. So I'm going to get a little shine mm-hmm. off of Secretary Bunch, that he's going to be there as well. So we've at least got those kinds of things, going in that space. A little something special for our members, a little something special for our donors. So it'll be good.
I want everybody to support the International African American
yes.
Museum. Go to IAAmuseum.org, to support and get more information. But Doc T, I've never asked you to do this.
What you want?
Would you mind, ending on a poem or something?
Some things in the low country are a little spooky, right? I mean, there's some serious energy down there, and
we are very supernatural people. We believe in the supernatural.
It really is. And so there's this thing happening with the number nine, right? So of course there's the Emmanuel Nine, that was Mother Emmanuel, and then there's the Charleston Nine, and these were the firemen that went in the space and we lost them. And then there were the nine that we lost at, the Albright and Wilson explosion at a factory. Okay. Listen, I was like three nines and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know sort of what is happening here, yeah. but I was invited to do something for Spotlight Awards, which was an awards that sort of uses the memories of those folks to honor folks who have done some service. And so, this is the poem that came out. So this is called Rise. It's dedicated to the Emmanuel Nine, the Charleston Nine, and the nine we lost at the Albright and Wilson explosion. And it riffs off of a quote by Dinos Christinopoulos, which is, "What didn't you do to bury me, but you forgot that I was a seed? When they tried to bury me, I discovered I was seed. Told I came from nothing, but I got roots. Conditioned to be weak, but kin known to break through concrete. So I watched and learned and stretched and burned and birthed and grew and flowered. So when the mowers came, I laughed like a dandelion. When the axemen returned, I rolled my eyes like acorns. Some folk don't know how trees work. When they tried to bury me, I discovered I was seed. Then they threatened me with the storm and found out I was born of the water. This, that thing threatens them the most. Who that they say I can't swim? My tears salted these seas, crying over bones and desperate pleas. I march deep through these waters, like bridges, like tunnels, my wake spirals and funnels, memory. Headstones that birth coral, feed schools, cushion quakes, carve canyons, calcify shark teeth, cap volcanoes at the spout. And sometimes, just sometimes, these waves rise up and remind the storm what water is really about. When they tried to bury me, I discovered I was seed. Then they tried to burn me and found out that I am the flame. Mm. Set fire to my home, set bomb in my garden, set brands on my body, even use my religion to burn. When will we learn? Never torch a phoenix. Nine feathers to pray and redeem you. Nine feathers to work every day and feed you. Ninefold wingspan expand flies into the flames and saves you. Hate fizzles. Only love sets fire like I do. Water from that storm quenched me. Heat from that flame released me. I sang myself to sleep beneath the soil so deep and sweet and true. When you tried to bury me, I discovered I am seed. So the only thing left to say is thank you."
Ooh, nice. Thank you, Dr. Tanya Matthews.
Thank you. You are so welcome.
CEO and president of the International African American Museum in Charleston, South Carolina. Once again, go to IAAmuseum.org to get more information on the museum or to get tickets if you can.
That's right. Come on down to Charleston. We got you.
That's right.
Give me a ticket.
We going this summer. Oh, you going to be pregnant, though.
I'm saying you can't go.
I just don't know. You're going to be like 8-9 months by now. I don't know if you can fly.
Yeah, I'm going to be able to fly.
We'll see.
My due date is August 18th. So we're going to come before August.
Yeah, come before August.
Yeah, I'm going to come in June. You know when you got all that stuff going on.
Exactly.
In June.
No, yeah, June be plenty of time. You ain't going to deliver
Thank
6 months.
So yes. You can't do nothing around here. Jesus. Happy Women's Month. Jesus. No.
It's Dr. Tanya Matthews. Oh, it's The Breakfast Club.
Wake that ass up early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
There's two kinds of people in the world. People who love Health Aid Kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Health Aid Kombucha.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.